Good morning and welcome to the April 1st, 2024 Chelan County Public Utility District Commission meeting today. In the spirit of safety, I'd like all of you to look down at your shoes and make sure that they're tied. And welcome to April 1st. Happy April 1st to all of us. I'd like to thank everyone for participating today and remind you to silence any of your electronic devices that you have with you today. And we'll do that as well. For those of you attending electronically, please remember to mute your screen. Today's meeting has a short agenda, both in our study and our business session. I expect we'll conclude all business this morning, both study and business sessions. There will be an executive session this afternoon, expect to last 120 minutes. We welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded. Members of the public are encouraged to ask specific questions after each item presented. If you wish to provide additional comment or ask questions related to matters not on the agenda, time will be provided this morning for you to do so. If you wish to address any of the agenda during those presentations, at the end of those presentations, please raise your hand, signal to us that you wish to speak and be heard. When recognized, please step up to the microphone right there in the aisle. State your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. Today we have all five commissioners present. We also have Manager Kirk Hudson and General Counsel Eric Wahlquist, as well as Rebecca Newman, Clerk of the Board, present. At this time, please join Kevin Vaughn in our Pledge of Allegiance and Safety Minute. Thank you, Kevin.
Let me just get your presentation going there. One second while I share.
As we have a Commissioner Dennett alluded to earlier, since it's April 1st, to experiment between what is fact and fiction and or maybe a special blend of both when you're online. So unfortunately, the sort of cheap signals that we learned in the early days of the internet no longer necessarily hold the credibility as easily as they once did. And so to help us deal with the blurred lines between reality and otherwise, the University of Washington's Center for an Informed Public built their SIFT methodology. So when you see some incredible claim or hear some kind of extraordinary news or really encounter any fascinating information, you should sift it out first. So to start with, you should stop and consider where you are. Do you know and understand the source of the information? The I stands for investigate. You should consider what biases or agendas the source might have and how those might be influencing their claims. The F stands for find. Are there other sources that are making similar claims or supporting it or discrediting it? And the T stands for trace. Can you find the original source and can you take into account whether that's being accurately represented? The real takeaway from the whole thing is it's a simple process and you really just want to try to change your mindset instead of just thinking to yourself, is this true or how is this making me feel? Ask yourself, do I really understand what I'm looking at? Thanks.
Kevin, so before you leave, I have not met you before. I'd love to know more about you and where you work at the utility.
Right, sir. I'm the supervisor for the CAD and GIS Services Group. I joined the district 13 months ago, so my 13 employees manage and sort of distribute all of the engineering documentation in our CAD system and then also manage and edit and maintain the GIS utility networks for our electrical and fiber and water.
Okay. And am I noticing a familial resemblance to somebody else?
Probably to my dad, Steve.
Yeah.
He likes to remind me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. All right, commissioners, we have no agenda items that have been recommended for transfer to the consent agenda.
There's actually just correction. There is one. Well, none, just the number seven.
Yes.
Correct.
Additionally, for the public's information, items on the consent agenda are subject to transfer to the regular agenda upon request of any commissioner. Commissioners, do I hear any requests or additions to the agenda? Stands. So Kurt, let's move forward with item number three.
Okay, I'd like to invite Andy Wendell up. Wanted to give you an update on the AMI opt-out customer engagement process that staff has been working hard trying to get to as many customers as possible over the last month or so. So Andy, welcome.
Commissioners, Andy Wendell, Director of Customer Service.
So yes, Chick mentioned we wanted to just kind of bring the status report back. We've completed a large effort with engaging our customers who have either chose to opt out or simply refuse the new meter installation. So we've got some good news there to share with you today. Just taking a look at our meter stats as they stand today, we have a total of about 51,000 meters in the county. You can see that the AMI meter installations were knocking at the door and completing that project really quickly with over 49,000 meters exchanged to date. We do have some kind of more difficult to reach meters or meters that are in areas that maybe our contractor wouldn't normally access. As an example, in our substations or our hydroelectric projects have various electric meters that we'd need to change out. So our staff is focusing on those as well as the contractor. We'll be wrapping those up over the next couple of months, and we'll be very near 100% meter exchange. I think when we went into the customer engagement process, looking at opt-outs, we were around 285 customers. You can see that number's dropped a little bit, and that's primarily due to the outreach efforts and helping inform customers at AMI. We'll take another look at that. These numbers, if you add them up, they wouldn't reconcile. And the reason being is that this is not accounting for a number of meters that are what we call idle services or services that have been put in the disconnect status for many years, and the customer has chosen not to re-energize them. For example, maybe a wind machine might have been shut down once a service or once the orchard was removed. We just kept that non-operating status. We chose not to change it. Those services to go away. But yeah, so that's where we're at on the total meters. April 1st. This slide just represents some of the outreach sessions that we held. We did both online sessions as well as drop-in sessions. Now we use Zoom media, and we did three different sessions. Leading up to that, we emailed or mailed a letter to every one of our customers out. And as I mentioned, that was about 285. We had about 68 participants of that outreach process. Many of them came in to visit this news first center here, which was great. And we also had some outreach in Chelan and Yada Park, as well as Leavenworth. Leavenworth was pretty quiet, but Chelan was spirited at all. That was great. So since we mailed those letters to all those customers, we've had a lot of folks that have also just contacted us via email or stopped in the office or staff.
on the staff that's vulnerable to her, who maybe missed one of the drop-in sessions. And those contacts are continuing today. We still have folks following up that received that letter that have a conversation. But for the most part, it was a, you know, fairly high participation and we consider it successful. Just some general observations I'd like to go over. One thing, as always, whether it's AMI meters or, you know, what we're doing at our hydro project or what have you, our customers just appreciate getting that information. During the outreach, we did record and video the Zoom meetings. We made that available to customers as well that couldn't make it. So just in general, those customers are expressing appreciation for the information. Much of the information that the customers have are from, you know, the internet, Google, or experience from another utility that was doing different things in my system. So it was great for us to be able to really communicate how we're using the system, what we hope to achieve from it, how it specifically functions. Many of those customers chose to opt back in as we had those conversations. And as we continue those conversations, education, customers are opting in. There's more customers opting in now than opting out. So we're going in the right direction. The key is that one-on-one conversation, right? So rather than standing up in a room like this doing presentations, just being able to sit down with customers one-on-one where they can share their concerns or ask questions, provide responses is the key there. It is very time consuming. It's taking a lot of staff's time, but it's valuable. One of the things that customers are learning during these information sessions, AMI system provision with that automatic notification when the power is out. So if you're a homeowner in Chelan County with a new AMI meter and the power goes out, we know power is out because the meter communicates back to the operations center immediately. So if you're down in Arizona for the winter and your power goes out, you can rest assured that we're going to know about it, be able to respond quicker. That particular function really is attractive to a lot of folks that they didn't know otherwise. So just as an example, there are many reasons why customers would opt out of the AMI system, but these that I noted here are some of the more common reasons. People are concerned with data privacy and network security, you know, something to be able to breach in this and, you know, control my home or things, the various things in my home. Interesting enough, this government oversight, people are concerned that, you know, the federal government or the state government could enforce turning power on and off through our AMI network. The RF has been a longstanding concern, radio frequencies or electromagnetic forces, and as well as the thought that the advanced meter infrastructure is kind of a gateway for other technologies. All of the information sessions that we provided, we covered these topics as well as other topics, and were able to provide meaningful responses to those concerns. So just wrapping up, some of the next steps that we're thinking about is, of course, continue those one-on-one conversations, invite you to conversation with all customers. I will consider kind of a second round of informational sessions or contact with those customers in April, May, June, and specifically focusing on those customers who haven't responded to us. They haven't filled out an application for an opt-out meter. They just refused the meter when the contractor was there and we haven't been able to make contact again. So we'll do that with some direct mailing, possibly some direct calling, and other options for them to consider. But our efforts continue beyond today. We do plan to begin applying that opt-out fee, $5 a month, beginning in June. Trying to think about ways that we can incent our customers beyond June to opt in. There's a variety of different ways we could do that, but we haven't landed on anything yet, but we're certainly looking for opportunities to incent customers to come in and utilize the AMI program. So with that, that's all I had. Any questions or feedback?
Yeah, and at first I want to say, great job in attempting to do everything in your power to engage every customer in the county. That's really important. This commissioner says thank you. I'm really curious, you know, if you didn't speak to it, and I know you probably got the number, you know, how many people have you just not been able to connect with any methodology up to this?
Yeah, it's a good question. I would say that it's probably somewhere between 30 and 40% of those customers.
Of that 250?
Yeah, that 250 or that 280. Yeah, probably about 30-40% of those. You know, it's just sometimes today it's just hard to connect with a customer. We can send them letters and use different mediums, but it's just hard to connect.
Yeah.
But we will continue to try to connect with those folks, particularly as we lead into June and those fees being applied, we'll continue to do that. My suspicion is that we'll have conversations shortly after they receive that first free.
And how long after that? Even if you get out a couple of months, you can just, and they decide they want to opt in, just move forward from there.
Yeah, I think so. And perhaps there's an opportunity to, you know, incent them after the first month or two to come back in.
Again, thanks for all the work that everybody's done that money since the challenge now is getting the other customers to come online. And I have a couple things here. Is there a certain thing that generally out there that when you have these meetings with the customers, is there a certain thing that really brings them in, or is it just general overall view of the whole process? What actually changes them?
Yeah, well, I would say once they learn how the system functions and what it is that we're trying to do, right? That kind of PUD is, of course, we're trying to improve our reliability, keep the lights on for our customers. And when they do go out, we're trying to respond quicker and more efficiently. This technology allows us to do that. So we're able to explain exactly how the system functions, how it works, the security aspects of it, the reliability aspects of that. Because we know that not every AMI system is the same, and not every utility uses the AMI system for the same reasons. We have very specific reasons in our business case. And I think when customers understand that, they hear it from us, and they understand that, they trust us, and they choose to own it.
And then one other, we have this fee that's going to be associated down in June, and these customers, help me understand, they had a choice, is that correct? They wanted to have these meters installed, and so we gave them that choice.
Yeah, that's correct.
Reading meters really doesn't cover the true cost. That reading me. But that doesn't really tell the cost of reading something to me as it continues to stay.
Yeah, our initial analysis that we performed, the estimated cost for capturing the reads, the staff time, the vehicles, those types of expenses were more than the $25 a month. However, we chose something. We as an organization, you as a commission, adopted something that was, what I believe, in line with other utilities that were similarly situated, that have AMI systems and off-cloud programs. So I think we're kind of in that spectrum of where utilities landed in terms of those costs.
Are there any other examples within the utility if we have a fee associated with reading costs in any particular part of the industries or whatever?
We have a lot of what we call fees and charges. Of course, this particular fee falls within that category of fees and charges. And fees and charges are generally costs that are incurred by a small subset of customers. For instance, we have a fee for a reconnect. If somebody disconnects their power, or wants their power disconnected, and it goes south for the winter, and we'll go out and we'll disconnect that and to reconnect that in the springtime when they.
That would be just a one-time charge.
It's a one-time charge, right? That's correct. So the answer is yes. I mean, we have a lot of various fees and charges that are associated with services that we provide that are kind of non-standard and one-off. So our new standard meter is the AMI meter. That's our processes are built around that standard. So to go out and capture a read and bring that back from a customer would be a non-standard process or a non-standard service that we would provide. Okay. A one-off.
Now just to be clear, we gave all customers the choice of having this meter or not having it. Is that correct?
Yeah, we defaulted that we were going to replace the meters, but we offered an opt-out program. We offered the customers a choice at the beginning of the deployment. We offer it today, and my understanding is that we'll continue to offer the opt-out on a move-forward basis, whether you're building a new home or you have an existing home. There are qualifications, of course, for that. For instance, a commercial installation would not qualify for opting out. So there are some qualifications, but for the most part, if you're a residential customer, you have a choice to opt in or out.
Congratulations on what you've been doing so far and meeting with the customers. And I would encourage that process. Keep working with the customers, and the goal is to get them online. It's really not the cost that we need. Yeah, it's not even going to cover the cost. Our goal is to get people on the system. That's the way I feel about it.
So we think you'd like to have every customer utilize the AMI system.
Thank you.
Andy, I think it would be remiss in not noting the fact that this has been a very big project for you. And I can only imagine a sense of elation on your part as it's coming toward its end. And also knowing that as is your time with utility. And so I really want to commend you and your team for all that you have done with this and many other projects. I was sitting here, you know, thinking about all the different acronyms that we have, and AMI is number. Obviously, advanced metering, but I think of it as Andy the Inspire. And I do believe through your leadership and how you communicate with our ratepayers, with the community, with our board, that you do inspire others to be your best, to really understand where our community is coming from and try, while representing the district, also hearing from our ratepayers and trying to come up with doable solutions. So thank you for all you have given.
I appreciate those kind words. Thank you. I would just add that this project took a village, and there's a lot of employees that contributed greatly, that took on a lot of extra to make this happen. And it was really the employees and their dedication that made it sustainable. I appreciate these kind words.
Same sentiment, and I think I would just add one comment to thank our customers. all the nice things have been said about you and in your team and the staff to make this conversion, but our customers have worked to get their questions answered. They've taken the options and considered them and really grappled with those. For many of those people, it truly was something to grapple with and get their questions answered. But their flexibility to work with us to change our business model was a big deal. And it allowed us to just seamlessly, I know it doesn't seem seamlessly to you, but really the PUD made a big shift in the way they do business, which will provide better service in the long run for all the customers. So big to our customers and our staff, and appreciate it. So thank you very much.
Thank you. One final quick question. So are you saying at this point in time, we are officially at that point where I don't have to call in the power outage?
That is correct.
Okay.
And the meters are equipped with what we call a super cap, a small meter. And when power goes out, the meter is powered by the capacitor, and it continues to communicate with our operations for about 45 seconds. And while it's communicating, it's telling us Randy Smith is out of power.
Well, and besides that, you know, there's enough of my neighbors that know I'm a commissioner that when the power goes out, I do occasionally get a call.
Yeah, so we'll know before any customer, or at the same time.
That's a great response I can give.
Yeah.
They know you're without.
It's a great response too, because Randy usually lets me know when he's out of power, so.
Me know.
Truck ripped out the wire out of my shop this morning. He knew exactly what happened and when. It was not necessary.
Did you hear Kirk called him?
We would know that right away. They were going to want to set it into our operations.
You mentioned that to me. Yeah.
It's come into our desks that we viewed in the op center outage. Is that where all of that information flows?
Yeah, there's folks in our dispatch area that are picking those alarms up and dispatching servicemen to them.
Right. Well, job. Well done, Joe. With your team, man.
Pass that along. Thank you so much.
At this time, I will open up the floor to the public for any comments or questions that they have with us. I don't see anything here, but make sure I'm not, do I have anybody online public that's, all right. So at this time, we will move into our business session. And commissioners, we have a consent agenda in front of us. Is there a motion to accept a consent agenda?
So.
Second that. That was Gary, I heard. Okay. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Gary, did you, I just want to clarify, did you oppose? Are you
no, accepting? I did not.
Okay, you accept it. Okay. Just a little time lapse there in the internet. So just wanted to clarify. All right, thank you very much. Kirk, since the resolutions are complete, why don't you go ahead and begin with manager items?
We're actually on agenda item number 3.
Oh, I skipped.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I'll move right along. Like to invite Lisa Graves and Vicki Griffin up. This is a resolution authorizing the general manager to sell a 5.6-acre parcel of real property in Douglas County, Washington, located along U.S. Highway 2 near Rocky Reach Dam, together with an access easement to Public Utility District Number 1 of Douglas County.
Welcome. I'm sure that was an April Fools joke on my part. I'll just say that.
Welcome, ladies.
Good morning. I'm Lisa Graves. I'm here with Griffin, our real estate department manager. And as Kurt said, we're here to introduce a proposed sale of 5.6 acres to Douglas County PUD. This property is near Rocky Beach Dam along US Highway 2. The 5.6 acres is primarily made up of a portion of the 19.07 acres that we acquired from Washington State Department of Transportation. The Douglas PUD is interested in this property for a substation site. It's near their Rocky Beach switchyard, and two of their transmission lines run across the south half of this piece of property right now. So there's a little bit of history that got us here. Douglas has approached us a couple of times in the past to acquire property in this area. The district wasn't able to accommodate because we had our own needs for that property. So in 2017, when we learned that the DOT was preparing to surplus their undeveloped right-of-way, we wrote a letter of support in 2018 for WashDOT to sell some of that property directly to Douglas. WashDOT's policies didn't allow them to segregate the property. It was going to be offered in its entirety to the district, so it was a take it or leave it for us. We knew we wanted the bulk of the property, so we decided to acquire it. In 2021, the district and Douglas PUD entered into an interlocal to cooperate in establishing a piece that we could later sell to them after we completed our acquisition from WashDOT. We completed that acquisition in 2022, December actually. Since then, we've taken those steps to create a separate parcel of the 5.6 acres, had it appraised. The proposed sale price is that appraised amount of $186,000. So, that's kind of it in a real quick nutshell. We did want to take this opportunity, the slide before you, Douglas has another request of us, and we'll hopefully be back in the near future. This little triangle you see up there is surrounded by property they acquired on the east side of the highway, and they would like to acquire that little piece. That property over there is what they've acquired for their hydrogen facility. So, you have any questions?
Carmen? Driving down here today, I stopped looking at the property.
Mm-hmm.
Took some pictures and whatnot. And of course, I don't know if I was involved in any of the preliminary discussions regarding that. Since they have so much property on the other side of the road, why, and their transmission goes through that as well. So, why is that particular piece of property so important?
Well, they insist that they need it for expansion for yet another substation, or potentially they've wanted to expand their switchyard as well. And I don't know enough about how they could expand that either. But I've asked them what their needs were, and it's always been real clear that that's what their needs are on that side of the highway.
There are two transmission lines also encumber a large portion of the property. What's not encumbered is up in this suburb. The rest of us encumbered by their transmission lines that we would be able to do a lot with either.
No, but of course, right now it looks like it's storing all the material on there. There's lots of schools and lots of stuff. I didn't know if that's us storing things there, or was that Douglas County?
Douglas isn't using it. There is property now south of there. We have a permit to another property owner. I don't believe there's anything existing on this 5.6 acres right now. I've been out, unless something's been moved on to it. Sorry.
Yeah, no.
Okay. Nobody's using that property.
Okay, well, is this something we really want to get rid of? Is this all surplus? We bought it, and now it's all surplus?
We purchased the property over the property from DOT, and when Douglas approached us back in the early 2000s and has been trying to to accommodate the site. We kept saying no because we needed the property that they wanted to keep it on. And the direction we were given by senior management at the time was find a way to get them what they need. So this is a kind of accumulation of almost 20 years of PUD co-acquire property in this area at the direction of both, you know, what they wanted and the direction.
So is this just a direct link and state, or is there something that should PUD sort of? Some sort of a deal made for 3 years property for actually, something like that?
It's just a straight say. Yes.
Is there any urgency for this to take place now?
Only in that it's been many years in the making, and we established this interlocal that had said that we would try to accomplish the sale within a year of acquiring the property. We did extend that by a few months. It took us longer to go through those steps to separate the property. So the interlocal we created in 2021 had said we were going to complete a transaction within a year. We completed that purchase in December of 2022. And just 4 months ago, we extended that to the end of April. So
whoever the app is still subject to
that. It is.
And just to reconfirm, the original purchase price of the property was then assessed at that time. This purchase by law is, it's assessed now at the current value and sold at that current value.
Yes. We had the appraisal completed in January, and this is for the appraised amount of 186.
So there were no previous deals on price and
no.
That type of thing. It's all straight sale,
yes.
Based upon valuation.
Yes.
Great.
And I would just add to, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think our original intent when this property came up for surplus was that Douglas would buy this piece,
right,
and we would buy the rest of it. And the way it worked out, Department of Transportation said they'd only have one buyer. So I think all along this has been the concept that we've both been supporting both utilities, that they would buy this piece, we would buy the other surrounding pieces, and this is just the process with which to get that done.
Correct.
And just, Commissioner, I would say just, so there's, it's not as hard as legal requirement as we have to have it appraised within a certain period of time. This board gets to make those decisions, but our practice, and I would say best practice in the industry, is to have those market assessments done. And Kirk's right, the washout process really doesn't accommodate multiple purchasers. Their process requires them to go to adjacent owners and sell there, which is why we picked up the whole thing with the intent of passing it along to Douglas because of, frankly, the washed out process more than the fact that we wanted it or needed to achieve it. So just for clarity.
Questions from the public on that? Let's take each one of these individually as a vote.
I would move adoption of resolution number 8.
Second.
Any further discussion on this resolution?
So, as of our strategic visioning, if this hadn't been purchased with the intent of it being Douglas County, I would be in an inclination to say, let's hold this property as we go through our strategic visioning. We might find that there are alternative uses in our own territory based on some of the other energy sources that are coming to life. So where I'm hanging on is the intent in why we purchased it. And I do believe in honoring that. I am concerned of selling that. But maybe to the other parcel of that.
Right now, they're both selling.
There is a motion.
In a second?
Yeah.
But anyway, so I right now stand and post the motion. For the reason that, you know, partly because of what Commissioner Allen has said, but also I really don't see, you know, that's property and buy property just so that Douglas County can have a shot at something. It's not me, it's about dollars. They can do it all the way. They don't need children, they can do it for. And I see that little jog there that it cuts into really, I don't see the purpose of that important portion of Douglas County. They have a tremendous amount of acreage on the other side of the road that all could be dedicated for any transmission and whatever they want to use it for. So I think that part would serve China PUD much better. I'm just opposed to this argument.
I just want to make a correction. I said 5.2 acres.
You know, I make her the motion and I'm, you know, I think I understood the background and you have, you know, and I understand the rationale from both of you that we want to be looking down the road, and I think we are. This particular piece of property, as I understand it, we never really wanted it. We wanted part of the property, but not this particular piece. And the understanding when we purchased was we know who does want it, and both of it, our needs can be met in this process. Land is the property they need, but with this property they need, and everybody can walk away a winner, including the state. The state hadn't had their particularly cumbersome process. These pieces would have been sold separately originally.
And just another twist a little bit. Back at the time when we talked about, after WashDOT had said, well, we appreciate that you're willing for us to sell some of what we're going to offer you to Douglas, but we can't do that, then when we were talking with Douglas says, well, if you want, we can pick up and buy the whole thing and then later sell some back to you. And we really felt it was better to be in the driver's seat and acquire it, so.
We're out of your state. Short of beauty, first thing, because Douglas didn't have a shot at it because of, you know, it's next to like property.
Right.
So I think that.
No, it wasn't due to WashDOT's policies, correct?
Here, I would like to ask for some guidance on the motion. As a question, if there was, so we have a motion on the floor, if we were going to, we haven't heard any information back from staff that we have any need for this, is that correct? Am I hearing that no one has said we need this process?
Went through our standard process of vetting this internally, internal stakeholders. All of our internal users have the proposed sale. Granted, they're all aware of Douglas's ask to begin with, but there's been no indication of specific.
We don't have any existing facilities on that property. I've got stuff pretty much everywhere else, but not right on that piece.
So where I'm going, I haven't heard an amendment to the motion. Do we have to?
Would there be wisdom in table?
Yeah, that's, I guess that's kind of where if we could seek some additional time to get questions if you that have been risen today. Is that an appropriate step?
If that's your preferred path, you bet. At this point, you can call the question, or you can, for lack of a better term, table to delay the vote. Yep.
Three times.
So,
I would like us to table this for additional information. So what wording do I need to have?
So I think you can just move that it be delayed until a time certain. We could revisit it. The next meeting would be fine.
I move that we delay this motion until next week.
So you'll be voting on that motion at that point.
So let's, any further discussion on the current motion? Right now, the motion table is on the table.
Right.
And that's what I...
That's the current...
Can't talk about the motion.
I think that's what he meant by the current motion.
Any discussion on the tabling?
I can talk about the current motion, the second motion.
Right.
Is a motion to table debatable?
Yes. You have to vote on it, so you can debate.
I'm hearing no further comments or questions. I'll bring the vote to the table on the amended motion to table. All those in favor of tabling until next meeting signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Four, okay. Motion passes. I should say opposed. No one's opposed, so the motion will be tabled till our next meeting.
It'd be really helpful if and you could shoot the additional information that you're looking for my way, and then I can work with Vicki and Lisa.
And I think the questions that we heard today, strategic in nature, do we need this? Math and nature, if you have any other questions, please contact Kirk and clarify and bring this back up at our next meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
Okay, resolution number 9, capital budget revision.
Okay, I'd like to invite Tim McMaster up. This is a proposed motion to increase the total project budget for capital project RI170013, Rock Island Powerhouse 1 B3 modernization in the amount of $3.8 million for a revised total project budget of $28.8 million. Welcome, Tim.
We're here this morning to present a motion for your consideration to increase the budget for the B3 modernization program at Rock Island Powerhouse 1. The current budget is $25 million. And we're requesting an additional $3.8 million by late summer 2024, which would bring the total cost of the work. A revision budget revision was approved by the board in June of last year that increased the budget by $5.6 million to a total of $25 million. The previous revision was driven by costs of the work encountered to date. This revision is requested in variance of the work and higher costs have been incurred. By comparison, the first small unit B4 performed by the contractor was at $21.6 million. We do note that these are costs beyond what had been anticipated and forecasted at the time of the last budget revision. These additional costs can be attributed to categories such as contingency, which we're adding about a 30% contingency as part of this request. 15% is component and assembly installation and quality of components. 3% is our learning and capability development. 25% is associated with unanticipated issues such as ASR concrete reacting where the powerhouse moves, and we spent additional time recentering, reestablishing the geometry. Those are the type of issues that we would have to address regardless of whether the contractor was screened or not, because it's existing condition. And then the remaining 10% are items that we're tracking for which we believe the contractor is responsible, say, such as component quality, lack of turned over tooling, lack of supply items that they were required to provide to us. In each of these cases, district personnel have identified, assessed, and established corrective measures in a timely manner, as well as processing and coordinating addresses. And all of them, it's just set ourselves up to be more effective at seeing the remaining list. These also include a heightened sense of awareness as to similar issues that were not identified or visible during the execution of previous units. A couple of examples on the small units for B4. On B4, we have noticed that there have been issues with the quality of the stack up of laminations on the rotor room. In operation, they're actually floating. They're not seated down on the base of the rim the way they're supposed to be. Other issues that we've discovered on B3 is when we're assembling the runner hub itself, we have blades that bolt onto the hub and they're supposed to mate up to the flange. There's, you know, three towels that they have to fit on. They're about a half a thou tolerance. We realized on B3 that these were not mating. Determined that this was because of actually the thickness of the paint in the manufacturing process. We believe they bolted together and sent them off to the site. But our crews were able to pick up on this. And we made the modifications we needed. We used a gluing technique to make sure that they seated. And so that being said, we know B3 we're comfortable with, but now that does raise questions with the previous units. So we are maintaining our little vigilance and observing these units with these issues as we go forward and discover them. We do believe that there are many benefits and value for the district in taking on this work the way we have. Going through these, first is equipment quality and reliability. I'll say personally, I've been very impressed and humbled by the pride and commitment our district craft and engineering staff show in their work and in producing the highest quality results on these units. Some examples are actual redesign of elements to improve constructability, longevity, and future maintenance. Discharge liner in particular, how this gets put together. We believe this improved quality would lead to less rework and avoidance of additional outages like we involved in with B6 and B7 and B9. In the case of B6, outages for which we didn't have these units running. B7 and B5, under commission B5, we picked up on another issue with, since these are Kaplan units, we had a servo sleeve issue that was sliding up and down inside the unit that had been running that way for a while. Our crews were able, in engineering, were able to pick up on and come up with corrective actions in order to mitigate that. We've moved forward, we've corrected it on B6. Now we're in the process of evaluating B9. It's square in our sights, looking forward to B8 here as well. So moving on to other benefits in the term of safety. Quite a few improvements have been made between our engineering and craft staff as they've worked together. We've designed and built improved fixturing and tooling, things like crane hoists that beams that clamp onto the shafts so that we don't have the repetitive lifting type of injuries down in these cramped areas that they work. Another looking forward to B2, our staff have designed a new platform assembly and it also doubles as a containment that allows staircase access down into the discharge liner, which eliminates the need of having that as a confined space. And so it's safer, better atmosphere, easier to get out. We believe that using these lessons, we are actively keeping the lessons learned on B3 as we go. And it should improve our efficiency. We're much better tooled up. We think we're much better set up for the remaining units now from the tooling and practice and procedure and knowledge. Likewise, looking forward to B1 and B2, we will be revising our budgets based on our experience with B3 during the annual budgeting process. But we do overall feel that we're much better positioned from knowledge to looking experience standpoint to pursue these without incurring these type of costs. Rock Island System budget overall may need a revision towards the end of the year due to this and other projects. We are keeping a close eye on those as the year progresses. That's a motion is on your screen. Are there any questions I can answer?
Cheers. That's a lot. But what I hear is that we're doing it ourselves. Okay. And how are we retaining that knowledge as we go through everything, right? New employees, new mechanics, as that transitions over time, how do we retain the knowledge that we're going to pay?
Or as we go forward, our engineering is getting better and better at organizing and formalizing and storing this. Our central maintenance department in particular has been very good at documenting and taking daily performance, take their daily notes and enter them in. Say like in the case of the Breed 3 rotor assembly, once all that accumulated knowledge was taken down, we then had our lessons learned meetings and then brought in our technical writer and to where he actually wrote a procedure for the staff. We're looking forward to the next one. All of the tooling and fixturing that we've established are isolated in their own toolboxes and put aside, deploy them when we get to the next unit. All of those type of.
And this is all
we do.
New to what we have in past, let's say, this is a new process, and that's how we're putting it on. Because we are doing a lot.
Yes, yes.
And that is kind of the goal. That's it. There's going to be costs. Certainly. I'm just curious.
The biggest effort is so that we don't make those mistakes.
Exactly.
Get on making new ones. You know?
I just wanted to point out, I am in support of this, and these are hard. We are encountering a lot as we go into these machines, and I just wanted to point out one of the key points that is a reason for supporting this approach is that, and I don't know if it was clear to all of you, but when Tim said that we had outages of 13 months for two of those additional units, those are 13 months in addition to the multiple years they were out for the modernization, and then we came back in short order and had to take them out again for another 13 months. And so one of the things we're learning and one of the things our team is focused on is how do we do this in a way that we get the work done, its quality, and those machines then operate for 30 to 40 years and not have to come back to them in the next few years for another 13 months. Because what these numbers don't show is that's just the cost of the work. They don't show the lost opportunity. It might cost us less to try and do this the way we've been doing it, but it doesn't show that lost opportunity of those 13 months for each of those units in addition to the couple of years that they were out to begin with. So, and I do commend the staff for, I think your point, Commissioner Bergen, is a really good one. And they have gotten really passionate about developing procedures to capture that institutional knowledge. So the next person that has to come in 20, 30 years down the road has a procedure for how to do this work that they're doing. So all in all, it's a lot of work. It's tough. We're having to adapt to try and get the quality we're after. And I do think this is a great approach, and we're just recognizing what it's going to cost to do it this way. And I can't say enough how valuable the training has been for our employees, especially with the number of apprentices that we're going to be relying on for decades down the road to be able to do this work and acquire the skills and the learning and training going forward. It's going to be very valuable for our employees.
when you look at the breakdown of the total cost and how much that internal learning is, it's really not a significant expense for the return on it. I feel like we're in a tough, we have been in a tough place from a labor perspective, not only internally, but externally, and not just us, industries as a whole. So I wish there were a magic wand that we could, you know, be able to solve some of these problems, but I'm really excited that you guys are taking it upon yourselves to reinforce it, and thank you.
District makes to its capabilities, internal capabilities, such as their craft labor. It does make this, there's a lot of challenges here, but it does make it rewarding as well for everything. So.
Thank you very much. And one of the things that I've been kicking around, and I would certainly, I'm just throwing it out there as we were involved in this strategic planning process, looking into the far, far future. And at the same time, we're looking backwards how COVID has impacted supplies, workers, contract work. And I'm a little concerned that maybe those contracted services that businesses start paying for is, well, you know, it's post-COVID, the things cost more. And I look at the quality of skills of our employees, and I'm thinking, you know, when we contract out, and I know we need to do that at times, those contractors send things clear back to New York to be machined and worked on. There are a lot of hydro dams on this Columbia River, and I think it would behoove us, and again, I'm not talking about specific to this resolution, but just throw the idea out that create a strategic priority that we start looking at cooperating, kind of like the Hiker Research Institute, and creating something where the federal agencies that have the dams and our private dams and utilities and the public dams that are on the river, we think about forging some type of co-op together that allows us to create and machine many of those parts and processes locally, and give us the ability to control our prices a little bit. I just throw that out there. I don't know if that's something to think about, but it's something to think about. So whatever. Okay. Thank you very much. I went on a tangent there. I can't blame that on April 1st. So okay. Commissioners, anything else before I'd like to bring this up for see if there is a motion? Is there a motion, commissioners, for item number 9?
I move to approve item number 9 as presented.
Do I have a second? Gary, did I hear you?
Yeah, I think.
Do we have any further discussion?
I might be a little bit out of order, but Tim, you made some fascinating observations and comments. And I know you haven't spent your entire career here. You've been here a few years now. How long have you been with the district?
3 years now.
It's interesting to have that look back from you after 3 years here about the commitment of people at this utility. And I thank you for that observation.
Thank you.
Okay. All those in, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you. And thank you for tolerating me being totally out of order.
All right, now, Mr. Hudson, we are on item number 10. We go to management items.
Okay. I'd like to invite Bob Shane and Chris Blaine up. And as they're approaching, go ahead. I know there'll be questions about Chris, so I thought you might want to sit down. So I wanted to introduce you to our new managing director of Fiber Telecom, Chris Blaine. He today is his first day, and we're excited to have him here. And Bob has given us 23 years of distinguished service and is a tough person to replace. And we found when we went out and looked around, we found somebody in Chris that was a great person to take us moving forward. Chris comes from Silver Star Communications. He was the director of engineering and operations there. Prior to that, he had 9 years of experience with Verizon and 8 years of experience with Frontier Communications. He was also appointed by the Wyoming governor to the Wyoming Telecom Relay Service Advisory Committee, and he holds a degree from University of Idaho in business and marketing. So he's got a lot of telecom industry experience, which I think is going to be extremely valuable going forward for the district and its fiber and telecom program. Chris also actually went to grade school here in the Wenatchee area, so is quite familiar with this area. He's been living in Wyoming for quite some time, doing a lot of work in that area, and is excited to get back. So welcome, Chris. Bob, I know you'll still be with us in May, and I'm excited that we have time for a transition, that you'll still be here for another month while Chris is climbing the learning curve. And so appreciate all you've done in the fiber and telecom business for so many years for Chelan PUD from the inception, really, to get us to this point where Chris can build off of the legacy you've built and take us forward. So thanks, Bob, and welcome, Chris.
Yeah. Does that mean anything to you? No? License plate, County 23, Silver County. Yes. There you go. Welcome. Well, it was on my license plate. Now I'm in Washington. I'm not breaking news. I have Washington license plates now. Yeah.
Any other questions for Chris?
Commissioner, that I when I have brilliant ideas at 4 or 5 in the morning, I text them to the manager.
Yeah.
And you know, I sent him one this morning, and he responded that, you know, this needs to get to broadband. And so, you know, maybe I should just add you to the list. I don't know. Probably not. But I just read in a business newsletter that it appears that the average satellite launch for the next 8 years through 2032 will be about 2,800 satellites per year for the next 8 years, which could change our entire broadband landscape dramatically. So welcome aboard.
Yeah. On that point, I think you probably all realize that there's a lot of space congestion. A lot of these systems actually have anti-colliding systems, and so they don't hit the debris in that atmosphere. So there's becoming a significant pollution problem in those atmospheres right now. It's very crowded.
It's amazing.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you on the team.
Appreciate it. I'm excited to get
Welcome. Started. Welcome. Welcome, Chris.
And at the same time, we're having a hard time letting Bob go. So.
Probably not as hard as you think.
So it's congratulations on that. We're pleased that you're
getting some time together to transition and so thanks everybody for making that.
Looking forward to retirement and having Chris take over.
Great opportunity. Yeah. Very good.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you both. Okay, just a couple other items. I wanted to mention that I'm planning to include, and I think it ties nicely to your comment on the proposed motion and strategic planning, that we're planning to include a placeholder on each board meeting agenda going forward for the rest of the year. Strategic planning, business planning, or budget planning. There's a number of moving parts to all those pieces that tie to strategic planning, and we thought there's enough happening that we should just put a placeholder there and we'll plan to bring things back. There's some financial metrics that we actually have by resolution that go through 2024. And so we need to be thinking now what happens to those in 2025 and making some assumptions around business planning and budgeting. And so that as a forum to bring some of these forward and have a good discussion on them. So you can see that or expect to see that on the agenda going forward. And if you have things that you'd like to be put on there, just let me know. And more than happy to include any discussion along those lines. I wanted to point out in your board packet, there was a lessons learned on Resolution 7, which was on the consent agenda. It's very positive lessons learned, but wanted to make sure you saw that in your emailed board packet. And then finally, for manager items, wanted to let you know that we are planning to bring back resolution for the rate equalization charge for Peshawson Water District at the next board meeting. We'll probably list it on the agenda, but it's one that I'm thinking, because the motion was passed and was very clear, I'm going to be inclined to recommend it be placed on consent, and be up to you all as to whether or not you want to put it on the consent. But thought the direction was very clear, and we've just since gone back and done the calculation for what that chart would be, and then we're bringing it forward as a rate action for the board. So that would be the plan.
So that just officially takes the direction we provided and puts it into a resolution, so there's no legal question down the road.
That's the plan.
Yeah.
Commissioners, simply to have the resolution restate the guidance that's been given, and in a way that aligns with our rate action processes, and I'm going to say leaves open whatever else the board would like to provide for in terms of periodic check-ins, review, whatever target metrics need to be achieved. It's a little bit different than what I would think of as the traditional, you know, incremental increase annually by X percent per year, or a more traditional laddered approach. So it'll all be laid out for you, though, and happy to answer any questions. Make sure we're meeting the mark that you all have set.
That's all I had.
Okay.
Lisa.
So for April travel, I have Commissioners Allen and McKenna traveling to Sacramento to visit SMUD Sacramento Community School. The Wakuda Annual Conference is at the Skamania Lodge, April 17 to 19. So please check the hotel dates are fresh. Let me know if we get any of those. Everybody's all registered and have friends. In May, we have NWPPA Annual Conference. There's Alan and Arsino are attending. June 7 to 12 is the APPA Annual Conference, San Diego. Attending, Commissioner Walton, have you decided?
I will be attending.
Thank you. Again, let me know if any of your hotel dates need to change. If I can help you with airfare or anything else. 27th, we have the water committee meeting. It looks okay. Commissioners Allen, Berger, and McKenna attending via Zoom. And then the commissioners Arsenault and Smith, if you attend in person. By 17 to 19, walk through the meetings, but I'm not sure where. Unless you already know. Commissioner Allen traveling to Whistler in July for the ENWER annual summit. And then Commissioner Arsenault traveling to Washington, D.C. for APPA Policymakers Council for the end of July. And it doesn't look like I don't have anything in August. Any of you have something I've missed?
Lisa, anything else, commissioners? Questions, Lisa? Thank you very much for your help. Keeping this organized. All right. Items. We have a special meeting to take care of, commissioners, with a motion. Would somebody like to make that motion?
I move to set a special meeting on Tuesday, April 23, 2024 at 10 a.m. at Pivus Event Center, 3 North Worthen Street, Wenatchee, for the purpose of holding a strategic visioning kickoff and strategy partners update.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. Thank you. Commissioners, anything else from you?
I would like to say that it's a busy time in our area. The port had their economic update. What was that, a summit or what was happening in our area? And one of the things that I really took away, I think everybody here went, is that right? And the same thing, I'm sure. But on the population growth or lack thereof and anticipated, so this ties right into what Tim was speaking about in my mind, that we are potentially in hard times when it comes to labor shortages and having to become resourceful in our own machining, how we come up with innovative ways to meet our own needs. Our area is not anticipated to grow, if the trends are as they are indicating, not really anticipating the growth that we might need to keep us moving forward. So it'll be interesting. Is that kind of your takeaway? No growth in different areas. Like yeah, we have the Amazon.
I've had this over years, so viewpoint that is still not being diminished. The number one economic sector in North Central Washington is agriculture. And he validated that. It was interesting looking at the economic sectors that so much of the rest of our economy is built on service economy. You have to get down to number five, and I think it's the hospitality sector that he talked about, which I think our tourism falls under hospitality sector. That's producing actually some wealth for the county. People bring in outside money into the county. That I like that. I mean, selfish person that county. We need to do that. But the other three sectors in the middle all are
based around the production economy, which, by the way, our utility is one big piece of the production economy. I mean, we're, the PUD is an important economic engine for Chelan County with all the money that is brought into the county from outside the area, which, you know, I'm a businessman, and that's exciting. So it was good. It was a good presentation.
Also addressed our rising housing costs, and that one is really prohibitive for a lot of bringing in new employees, as we know. So that's not a hurdle that's expected to go away unless incomes rise significantly. So that, you know, different challenges for our area, but definitely opportunities. And I also wanted to thank you and our entire staff for the wonderful celebration, the HCP celebration. I thought that was a fabulous turnout. It was wonderful to see both Senator Cantwell and Representative Schreier, and also to hear from all the different agencies that have been so involved in the success of that program. It was wonderful to be part of. So thank you for that. Right.
You haven't been here that long, can't do it.
Feel like it.
And lastly, I just want to mention that I got to go to the North Shore substation. It's about to be energized, and oh my gosh, I had no idea what our team puts into making sure that not only is the construction precise, the wiring is accurate. It's, you know, and you may already know this, but everything seems to be new for me. They actually go in and double check every bit of that construction to look for any flaws that might come up, because they only have one chance, one shot to get it right when that station is energized. So the high stakes there and the dedication to our team for being so thorough is pretty impressive. That's enough for
Kelly.
Thank you.
Kelly, you'll say, you know, as a commissioner, you may be the newest commissioner, but we're always learning new things. The, you know, Tracy, the amount of information that I gleaned from the HCP celebration, the Habitat Conservation Program, I learned things I've never heard before. And so don't feel bad, you know, that you're learning a lot. I mean, we are continuing to all learn a lot. I just, that was a marvelous opportunity for all of us to celebrate a lot of hard work and a lot of cooperation amongst agencies that don't typically cooperate and play well in the sandbox together, and to see that it does work if you just don't give up, if you keep coming to the table and keep working at it. I'm glad we have the representatives that we have that keep calling us to the table and encouraging us to do that. And so it was a marvelous activity, and kudos to our staff for just pulling off the logistics of that event. I thought it was amazing. Including the great food.
Yes.
Made by our own contractors. So, all right. Anything else, commissioners? Carnan?
Just to follow up on the discussion on the growth of the area. Listen intently, and I attended the regional water meeting. There's the issue of a second source is a big issue. We're
ready to get closer to your microphone now.
And we've been discussing this, the committee has for 16 years studying the water source, and we model growth keeps going, and the use of the water system demand keeps increasing. And so we had a graph that was presented meeting that shows the availability of that sort. And you probably know it's a single sort. That has a life of about 12 years, and then we'll be out of water on that sort. And so that's what the projections are at the current growth that we're using. The issue of having a second source is becoming more prevalent every day as we move forward. And so the committee had requested that, you know, we want to move forward on this because we know that we have to do something within 7 years, because that's what's going to take in order to get ahead of the demand. And so there's a lot of issues around that. And so we're still studying, but yet we're kind of like, okay, let's get this thing rolling. Let's make a decision. And so that's the focus that we're taking. It's going to cost some real money to do this. Yeah. But there's areas along the river right now that property is such that we can acquire now rather than waiting 7 years down the road. It's more expensive than and as we all know, so it's trying to move forward. 16 years is a long time to study, so, and we're still doing that. We decided to move forward.
Well, 16 years is a long
time. Time goes by us, though.
Oh, yeah.
You know that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Gary, I'm just checking in with you to see if there was anything you would like to say.
No, I'm fine. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. And I would agree that time does go fast. The older you get, you're still too young.
All right, thank you, Gary. Delegation, follow up on delegation of action items from previous board meetings.
From the last board meeting, March 18th, we had two action items. Andy Wendell was going to provide information on whether the vegetation at North Shore substation is irrigated. And Lyle Moore will include the number of meter installs going back 20 years for the next load growth presentation. Don't have any new updates on those. Those were captured. And then for the next item, we had one today, which was for me to provide any additional information on the proposed 5.6 acres to Douglas PUD being surplused and whether or not there may be strategic planning value associated with that.
At this time, I will open up for any, do we have any additional public comment? Do we have any matter of general business that may necessarily come before the commission? Hearing none, we will stand in recess until commissioners. Do we want to start at 12:30 for executive session? 1 hour from now?
Is the committee opposed to a working session?
So, commissioners, let's plan on our executive session beginning at 12:30. At this point, we will be scheduled for approximately 120 minutes. And at this time, we are in recess for executive session.
Do you want to read the reason?
Oh, sorry. Boy, it takes a whole group of us to keep me on track. The executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party and or legal risk is authorized by statute for 120 minutes approximately. We are in recess. Coming out of executive session, no votes were taken, no decisions were made. This meeting is adjourned.